Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Hello, everybody. It is season 3, episode 9, Easy Come, Easy Go. Do we follow our heads or do we follow our hearts? That's a question on everybody's mind this week. This is peak Carrie and Aiden. They are at their best, which of course means Big is going to come in and shit all over everything when he announces he's leaving Natasha. And meanwhile, Miranda and Steve have broken up, but they're still roommates. And Charlotte is getting a proposal from Trey and she meets Bunny. Most importantly, Samantha is dating a guy with the funkiest tasting spunk. And now to segue from that to my guests, it's just so tough. I'm not sure quite how to do it. I guess we'll just have to jump right in. First up is an actor who wrote and starred in the hilarious movie The Estate, which is a must watch for our community, especially. It's with Eliza Coop, Eric Roberts, Heather Matarazzo, a true murderer's row. The Estate is streaming on Hulu, by the way. He's here with his Four Seasons hat on and his dog licking straight into his nostrils. Couldn't be cuter. Chris Baker, hello.
Hello. Richie, this is crazy. Richie, what's going on? He's missed me.
He's really working on you up there.
We're very close. We're very close.
I can see that. Listen, I'm just jealous because none of my dogs are as affectionate as I want them to be. So enjoy it. You know?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
In addition to Chris and Richie, we are also joined by an award-winning 35-year veteran casting director whose very extensive resume includes, just to name a few, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, The Mindy Project, Better Things, the Amazon series A League of Their Own. She is in A League of Her Own, Felicia Fasano. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I too have very licky dogs, but two are in their crates. And then I have my friend's dog living with me while he's shooting out of town. He just popped over here. He does like a little nip in the nose too. So
It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. It's a lovely feeling.
It really is.
We're needy and that's okay. You know?
My husband's a little grossed out by my willingness to just make out with a dog, but it sounds like this is a pretty safe space here with all three of us in terms of that type of behavior.
There's no boundaries. No boundaries.
Yeah. Let them do what they need to do. You know, that's what I've always said. Let's start nice and easy before we get into like, are you what Carrie? Are you a Samantha? I just want to know how everyone's... Felicia, we're recording on a Monday afternoon. Mm-hmm. How's your day? How was your weekend? What's going on?
My weekend was spent preparing for the KCRW pie contest that I'm doing next Sunday. So I'm an avid like baker, cook, all that stuff, but I'm not a pie maker. I'm like, I have fear of dough. So I was practicing and had a friend over with her daughter and we basically threw out my pie. So I don't know. I'm in trouble. I'm having pie dilemmas. That was what I did.
So you have to do like a live baking before judges?
You bring your two pies and then you're judged by probably the greatest bakers in the country are going to be there. And I'm going to be a fool and a half.
Do you know what pies you landed on?
No, because the ones I wanted to do, I wanted to go with something Italian, and I have a lot of beautiful lemons in my tree, and I make my own homemade limoncello, which I have started sitting in a cabinet.
Wow.
And I wanted to make something limoncello, like a limoncello curd. And this year they said no cream, no dairy, no curd. And curd is because of the egg yolks, but it is cooked a little bit. I don't know why. So I was working on some blackberry thing with the limoncello Italian meringue, but it was disgusting.
And my mouth is watering. Wow.
Truly.
I threw it out. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to wing it, or I'm going to ask someone to make me some crusts and make me a pie and bring them.
Well, that's the hard part, right?
Yeah.
So that I don't know anything about baking, especially pies. I'm impressed. Chris, what about you? What flavor pies did you bake this weekend? Literally or figuratively?
Just my last name is where the baking begins and ends. Although I did do some banana bread stuff in one of the lockdowns in the time that we will not mention. Mm-hmm. And it was an odd thing when my husband would come home and he'd be like, "What'd you do all day?" And I'd be like, "Well, I made a complete mess in the kitchen. I'm a carrion that way. I keep sweaters in my stove."
Same.
Yeah, but if you could do a banana bread, you can easily make a focaccia or something.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm half Italian, and so that would make my mom's side of the family just deliriously happy.
Oh, it would make me very happy.
That's right.
I would love it.
Before we started recording, Felicia, you were saying this is maybe your 50th time seeing this episode. I mean, I guess you would qualify as a fan.
These are my girls. Like, I am exactly the same age between Kristen Davis and SJP. Well, we always called her Sarah Jessica Parker. So we are all the same age. This is not like, I was watched them every Sunday. And every time they, you know, repeated on, what was that? They repeated constantly. I had cable,
TBS was the first one. Yeah, they were on, the reruns were on TBS first. I remember those billboards all over New York.
Yeah.
And they were quoting like Fuck Buddy and all the different things, but they were, because it was TBS, they were billboards. They were blocking out some of the words, and they were making, it was a multiple choice of guessing what everything was that was raunchy in all the quotable lines in like 2004 or 5, like so long ago.
It's like how they used to shoot with the boobs out, and then they shot the scene with the bra on, kind of thing. Yeah, right. Like that version of it. Yeah.
Exactly.
But it's funny because I've been thinking so much about it, because ever since, you know, we talked about this, and the thing that's so different for someone like myself and my friends who are my age is we were going through this exact same things at the same time. Whereas I think a lot of people who got onto it maybe when in their 20s were watching it. Because if I'm 33 watching it, the girls are 33. We've all already just had that experience where I think like the 20-year-olds were like learned something from it. But for us, it was like this comfort to it, knowing we're not alone. So I don't know. It's just they'll just be my girls forever.
For me, it was very instructive, because I think the show began when I was, my God, 11.
Oh, boy.
And the third season, because I had heard about it, you know, I grew up in Manhattan, and so I would see the bus ad of Sarah Jessica Parker for the first season. It was the bus ad from the show. And, you know, everybody was talking about it, and the Time magazine cover came out. Like, Who Needs Men, I think, was the title on the cover with the four girls. Mm-hmm. And as a little closeted gay boy, I remember I watched it live starting in season 3. And so for me to watch this at like 12, I remember I went to sleepaway camp for the first time, and I was really homesick. And the way that I got through that summer was by calling my sister every Sunday night from the camp in Massachusetts and asking what had happened on Sex and the City.
Oh my God.
This was one of the first episodes I saw right when I came back home. and then bought the DVDs and just, I mean, 50 is definitely the number that for this episode for me as well.
It's a messy classic. One, right? It's like, it has so much in one episode.
No, Felicia, it's probably, I mean, I was talking to Matt about this and All That Glitters, the one where they go to the gay club in season four, these are my two favorite episodes. But I think that one is because it's so, it was the most gay one that, you know, was like just a real, you know, the gay club and everyone's dancing and the confetti is going and, you know, the hot guy who works for the shoe company. I think that was like this episode, though, for me, I think it's the best version of what the show at its best had to offer, which was like incredible jokes. In really raunchy, go there, like it's not TV, it's HBO raunch with the blowjobs, a love triangle, romance, great lines, great locations, the outfits were crazy, that flash, you know, like pervert trench coat that she wears in the in the final sequence, like
so good.
It's just iconic on top of iconic. And I remember watching that again when I was way too young and my parents were never happy about me watching that, but I just remember watching it. And I mean, can you guys think of another time when there was a female hero who became an anti-heroine in like real time on television before this? I really, cause this is the episode where I think Carrie as a character and the show dared the audience to go along with them on this really, you know, crazy transgressive thing that she ended up doing with Big by engaging in a affair with a married man.
I think we skipped a few decades because I remember the shows like, you know, Maude or even like Rhoda, that era had that. And then it went kind of puritanical. You know what I mean? It was like that.
The 80s were a very chaste decade.
We skipped those decades and then finally got back to it, which is, I mean, that's sort of where it germinated, I think, showing this. They were maybe not as glamorous, but they were definitely dirty and funny, you know?
Yeah, it's so true because it comes up a lot on this show with everyone sort of looking back at this in retrospect. People are often like, I don't know if I like Carrie that much. You know, like now it's so much easier to like sort of see how flawed she is. But you're so right. Like this is a real turning point in that, you know, before this, I think we were always on her side and meant to be. And
well,
this
she
is
was
the
one
time.
Who was, she was like put upon, you know, by Big and his things and the guys that she was dating. I think sometimes she screwed it up, you know, like where she was trying to find out in season two with that guy if he was a freak or not. Her obsession, you scared him off, you know, and so and obviously she freaked out about that. And then there were times where she freaked out with Big trying to figure out what their relationship was. But this was, you know, just a totally different level. Yeah.
I find that
it is. Yeah.
When we get it there is. Every time, even on my 50th rewatching of it, I kind of want to fast forward through it.
Fuck me.
Yeah. I know. And
crazy.
It's almost feels
like,
a little
crazy.
And
she never says fuck. Yeah.
And it's like one more time. Would he have still done like still? You know, like, is he almost crossing the line there? And then you think
that is not a scene that has aged well. Them in the elevator has not aged well.
Not at all.
I mean, it's really funny. Like, they're the girl boss sort of, like, feminist thing where they're pushing the boundaries and, you know, men are accessories and the real soulmates are the women. And then, you know, you get this really sexually charged moment in this confined space where it becomes this primal, raw thing. And all of a sudden that girl boss thing just leaves the elevator and we're just left with this incredible, incredible, you know, energy that, you know, is so relatable too, as people have reread the show and her actions as a character over the years. And this episode is 24 years old. I mean, it was the summer of 2000. I mean, we've changed. I think we've gotten more puritanical again. This feels a little more 80s this time we're in. You know, no one wants to take those risks or be unlikable. But yeah, this was just such what a dream.
What a dream. What a fever dream. Well, let's go back to the beginning. We open on Miranda and Steve. They are cohabitating. He's sleeping on the couch. He's with the puppy. She's got the cat in the room with her. Because I'm watching this out of order, I don't even remember why they broke up this time around, but I'm assuming it had to do with Steve's ambition, something. How do we feel about Miranda in this episode?
My least favorite hair of hers is now. It's that era where her hair is like weirdly choppy, short, and like this orange that's not like flattering on her. She's had so many different versions, and some of it's so pretty, and it's the one I use the most. So,
I think today they would call this Miranda's hair a wolf cut, but less textured. But it is sort of a mullet with longer bangs. Yeah. That's what her hair is.
Yeah, it's a Lisa Rinna, but with like a shellacked, hardened texture.
Yeah, the same hair for 20 years.
I know.
That's right.
They just kind of like their story in this episode didn't really move anywhere, except for like clearly that he's gonna date the other girl, Mira, but. I just felt like when I was going back, I was like, why did they break up? Like you said, I couldn't remember. And I couldn't remember when he moved in. I was like, when did he actually move in? Because I remember them going to his really terrible apartment at one point.
I believe it was only a few episodes before this that they moved in. It was like a few episodes before. And then he wanted a baby. And she's like, you're insane. And they get a dog instead.
The dog, right.
And then things are just not working. And she feels like she's compromising too much of herself and it's just not working. And she obviously initiates the breakup because she's in that relationship. She was always in control.
Right. And they also do not know how to have a puppy because when he goes on the date, the puppy's just roaming around the living room. Who does need the puppy? Like, why is the puppy not in a crate?
Or did they have crates 24 years ago? I feel like they did.
Sure.
They did. Yeah.
Or something like a like one of those, what is it called? With the
the little
you know, like what I'm
play
saying?
Area thing.
Yeah.
She's doing it with her hands, listeners. We know what she's saying.
Roaming around. Yeah. My hands are not working.
It's always bittersweet to see Miranda and Steve together because obviously we love Steve so much. And unlike all of these other relationships, we know that it will never be the same with them because I'm assuming you both are following it just like that. And, you know, Miranda is no longer interested in dating men. And I am worried about what that means for our Steve, just in terms of how we're going to stay connected to him.
Well, she still has to co-parent her terrible son.
I also wish they would address
Brady is a complete menace in it just like that. I think they always talk about how in Devil Wears Prada, like the real villain of the show of the movie wasn't Miranda Priestley, it was Adrian Grenier, her boyfriend. Yeah. And I think it's pretty clear that and just like that, Brady is the villain of the Brady show.
Yeah. I wish they would address Steve's hearing loss. Because no one ever addresses it, and now it's clear that he has major hearing loss on it. I kind of wish that they would shine a light on it just to sort of put it out there. I started wearing hearing aids like 6 months ago. I have very mild hearing loss. It's much more age and restaurants, that kind of thing. I don't have to. It's like wearing glasses. You know, as you get older, that happens, and I don't want to get dementia. So it's. And it's completely connected.
It is. I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because your brain atrophies from that. You like kind of like tune it out. So it's just more like preventative for me. But I wish they would address it to make it more acceptable for people because there's a real good opportunity they have there with him. And people are saying, like, why is he talking like that? And you can see the wire, you know, like you can like.
Yeah, he wears it on the show too. And in the pilot for And Just Like That, like as Big is dying at Charlotte's daughter's
Recital.
Yeah. He's turning down the hearing aid, but that's the only thing as a joke, because the piano playing.
They don't even work that.
That's all we saw. Yeah.
That's funny.
The jumping ahead, but just to repeat myself for the millionth time, I'm sorry, listeners. But speaking of that recital, why wasn't Big there? What the fuck kind of husband is that? After everything he put her through, when the person who was always, always there, even more than Miranda, was Charlotte.
Yeah.
And you can't drag your ass to the Manhattan School of Music for an hour.
Or why didn't they just go to the the Hamptons? They should have just gone to the Hamptons, and Carrie should have been like, I'm sorry, I've seen your daughter perform so many times. I'm going to go to the Hamptons with my husband and have him not die.
I think she has a level of obligation to these friends after the shit that they have put up with.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Like,
he better be there. And that's the job of the husband to be there too. Anyway, let's go back to this episode, because
the best.
Carrie is with Aiden. They're at the new designer showcase and
at the Armory. The Park Avenue Armory is where it's on 67th and Park. Storied location.
It's beautiful. And his furniture is beautiful, no matter what Big and his dumb wife said.
I got a booth, bitch.
Yeah. I love how, like, she really loves that furniture. Like, she loves him. Yeah. She treats the furniture, you know, when he leaves the ring mark from the condensation and she wipes it with her hand. Haven't we all done that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like on something you love. Like, that moment was, like, beautiful. The way they even, like, did a close-up on it. I thought that was, like, something really special there.
I listened to the commentary a long time ago about the episodes. And Michael Patrick King was doing the commentary. And he said that Charles McDougall, the director, he's a British guy.
I've worked with him before.
Oh, well, yeah. He did the mini project pilot. Yeah, he did. He also did the pilot for Desperate Housewives. Like, I think this was one of the episodes that brought him into American television because of that moment of the ring. That was apparently his idea. That's what MPK said.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, she drops to the floor and hides when Big and Natasha walk in, which is so cartoonish. I don't think I've ever done that in my life yet. I mean, maybe I still will.
I've never ducked, but I have walked into a bar and just walked right out. Like, I waited in line in West Hollywood at, like, one of the places on a Friday night, and I'll walk in and I'll see somebody and I'll be like, nope, I don't want to do this. I don't want to say hi to him. Things didn't end great, or I just even if they ended well, it's just awkward, and I'll just back right out. But I never ducked.
This reminded me of another episode of the show. I was at the Gelson's over here, the one in Silver Lake, and I saw an old boyfriend. I bumped into an old boyfriend of mine there who was very West Side. So for him to be on the East Side, I was surprised. He's like, oh, I got married and I have a kid. And I was like, I got nominated for an Emmy. Just like the scene where she said, when he says, I think, is it after I had a kid? And she's like, well, it's clearly after.
I have a date.
I have a date. Yeah, I was like, I have literally that sex. And I thought to myself, I can't believe I just did that and then, like, ran away. So I couldn't hide.
And by the way, he probably walked away and was like, damn it.
Wish I had a date.
Yeah.
Maybe first year of living in LA, had a cater waiter job at a house for a director. And we were all wearing it was like a pirate theme party. We all had these pirate shirts on. And my friend was the bartender. I was the bar back. I wasn't even bartending. That's how low status I was at this event. And I had completely forgotten that a friend from college was an actress on this show. And she walked into the party. And by the way, we had nothing, but we had, like, totally a good relationship, but I just couldn't handle the humiliation of, like, my station in life. And I ducked behind the bar like Carrie did in this, like a cartoon. And she immediately comes up and goes, Matt, what are you doing? Fucking lunatic. I no longer speak to her.
Well, yeah, as she called you out, get rid of her.
Yeah, she's dead to me. It's so funny seeing them do the dance around. Are they going to reveal Big's name when they are introducing each other here?
I'm brilliant. Like, oh,
yeah, that brilliant. Was such a thing. The fact that we didn't know his name for such a long time.
So long.
It just hits so different now.
I also like, it's so funny, the things that I notice are all like these, like the colors or whatever, but how Natasha walked in just in white and automatically, is that the first time after they're married that she sees her, Natasha? Is that the, because Natasha doesn't seems to know who she is.
Yeah.
Isn't it a Attack of the 5'10" woman where Carrie is trying on dresses and Miranda is outside of the dressing room and Natasha walks out because it's a dinner that they're all going to go at, a charity function, a women's charity function. And Carrie's about to come out in her underwear. Yeah.
And she writes that she writes the there wrong or something. Sorry, I can't be there.
I'm like, freaking Annie, get your clothes on.
H-E-I-R? She's an idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the only other time, though.
Yeah, she's like no expression on her face, but dressed all in white. I don't know. I just thought that was a really smart move.
Yes.
She's the bride.
Still the bride. Still the tall brunette. Mm-hmm. And she's still blonde and curly. Yeah.
They do such a nice job of capturing that awkwardness of running into an ex in that way. You're with your person, they're with their new person. Just the like weird charge that crosses between them when they meet. And then Big gets drunk and he's just so toxic. I just hate
him
so
much. At a furniture show. He gets
at a furniture show.
Wasted at a furniture show. That's how miserable and messy he is. On like a Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
Are they really having whiskey in those beautiful crystal glasses there? Come on. We know they're going to be like the shit.
In the solo cup.
He brought his own maybe.
Yeah. I was like, where's that bar? I also didn't see a lot of other furniture around. It was just that one that they kept showing. I was like, where's all the other furniture?
Yeah. Good camera angles. Just constantly showing the desk and the table at every turn. Yeah.
There is such like kind of twisted wish fulfillment, you know, this moment of Big telling Carrie, I'm going to leave Natasha. It's not working out. And implying like, cause I want to be with you. And we of course cut to the girls all being like, you win. She's like, no, it's not a contest, but it's like, I can't say I've always wanted to have that moment. I mean, I don't know. We all want to have that moment in some way, not because I ever wanted to be back with the person, but because it does always feel like
you won
a contest. You're trying to win.
Yeah. What do winners order? I love that line where Miranda, I think, was like, well, what was he doing? And she was like, I don't know, drinking and leaving his wife.
Yeah.
So what do winners order? I remember when my husband and I were first dating, he's an engineer and he couldn't be further culturally removed from what my culture was, our culture was on this podcast. And I sat him down and I was like, for us to be together, you have to watch every one of these episodes with me and both movies. And that is what he did, you know.
Oh, that's love.
That's
and how does
that's
he obsessed now too?
He's no more into it than he was before seeing the show. But I do know, and he didn't watch End Just Like That. But he did, when he saw this episode, his jaw dropped too. He was like, what? And so even if he was shocked, then that means that, you know, this show, this episode could even convert non-fans to be like, holy shit. So and I would quote, he would ask me not to mouth the words too often because I would just be sitting there being, and he'd be like, you're distracting me. I can't watch the show. And so I'd be like, okay. And I'd have to muzzle myself so that he could enjoy the show.
Chris, what would be your best monologue from any episode right now? Like, what would be your, if you were, yeah.
Well, the blowjob monologue is one that if it was feasible, like, you know, in an acting school and there was an audition where you had to put together a monologue, I would have done that. But I literally, for my wedding vows, I did a version of the monologue to Alexander Petrovsky at in the finale, where she can't help, you know, inconvenience that type of love she's looking for. That is, I did like a version of that in my vows, and all my girls were, I could see them out of the corner of my eye, and my sister behind me were just weeping because they knew where they knew that just as well too. So yeah, that would be the monologue that I would have done. Yeah.
Well, Chris, we're living parallel lives. I mean, listeners have heard this to death, but Sex in the City was scripture in my wedding as well. It's important stuff. Mine was a mashup though, but largely the voiceover from the end of the series finale, the model about love and the, you know, loving yourself.
Yes.
You could quote it better than I could, I'm sure. Felicia, is there what as a casting director, what monologue would you want to see?
Oh, wow. I mean, definitely the blowjobs. Because, I mean, you know, nobody wants to.
Doesn't get any better.
That is writing at its absolute best.
Really? When I was rewatching it again all weekend today, every time I get to it, I'm like, this is just her delivery. I mean, all of it. The dialogue, the delivery, it's just perfect. It's just perfection.
And speaking of casting, I mean, this episode also has a Star Is Born moment Sex on a Stick that is Bobby Cannavale, who I don't know, he was just doing like theater before this, and this was his first big TV role. I mean, because I have not stopped seeing him, you know, since that episode. You know,
I don't know if that it was his first, but it was, you know, he worked a lot. He just kept, you know, getting better.
So good.
I mean, the thing with all of the guys on this, they only did one episode, you know, unless they were one of the three that over the 7 years had to real parts in it. You definitely wanted to see more of them. Like, I wanted all John Slattery all the time.
That was so good. Yeah.
When we were watching this one, my husband was like, it's too bad they blew their load on Bobby Cannavale in this way, because it would have been so great to see more of him. Their chemistry's so good. He's just such a good match for Samantha. And then I'm like, well, let's bring him back. And then just like that, but I forgot that she's not there. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Not that we know of.
Only Annabelle Bronstein. Yeah, was there in that 1 5-minute scene.
That's right. Do you think there's a world, by the way, where we put those differences aside, where we heal that wound, we get her back, we pay her enough money to at least
you guys watch The Good Wife, right?
Yeah.
I mean, reasonable. Mm-hmm. No. Okay. So, I mean, when Archie Punjabi and Juliana Margulies had some sort of falling out, I think it was like during the fourth season.
Yeah.
Archie Punjabi did not leave the cast. The Kings, the Michelle, and I forget the other guy's name, the husband and wife who run the show. I think Juliana was like, I cannot be in the same room as her. And so they made ways for Archie to have her own storylines that were never with Juliana Margulies. And then in the series finale, they had them shoot a scene together, but it was at different times. And they, like Lindsay Lohan in The Parent Trap, where they spliced the scene together. And it's very famous in Good Wife lore, where their eye lines don't match, but they're cheersing each other and they're looking at each other, but they're so clearly not in the same space at the same time together. And I don't know if they need to be at brunch together, but I would love to see Samantha in her 60s fucking, you know?
Absolutely.
Getting hers. Yeah.
I know. I mean, they did it. I mean, Jenji Cohen famously and Mary Louise Parker, they had them in separate camps. I mean, there's ways to do it. I'm not really clear on, I mean, except for everything that we've all heard, you know, what the real is on it, you know, what would it take? Because I'm sure if there is a what would it take and they all agreed on it, they would do it.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a different show than Sex and the City. So the way that they would do it, it wouldn't be the same show anyway. So you wouldn't adhere to the same formula. And I heard that a few people that joined the cast season one and season two are not coming back for season three. So there is kind of an opening.
I know. I listen. It's all
my friends are casting it right now. My friends are cast. I was just with somebody who works on it.
Well, tell them they are in our prayers. They are doing the Lord's work.
I know.
Tell them if they need a real Sex in the City head. I know the cadence. I know the joke delivery. I know it like the back of my hand. Even though you probably, Renee, you should probably cut this out. But yeah, I if there's ever
not at all, you should be a dramaturg for that.
Yeah,
I know better than the writers themselves.
No, that's not possible. But and there are a lot of Sex in the City heads who could do a doctorate on the show. But yeah, that would be such a dream. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be great.
The Good Wife thing, someone else brought that up sort of as a possible solution for the Samantha thing. I hear it. I would take it. Certainly, it's better than nothing. It was like seeing her on the phone call, knowing that they didn't shoot that together. I was still like, oh, their chemistry's crackling, but they're not talking to each other. But
the jokes were landing though.
They were. Like, God, they really do love each other. But for me, I think that a lot of us are as equally invested in our like fantasy version of the offstage rift as we are the rift between the characters. That it's like, I need a holistic heal. I need to know that everyone has had a full come to Jesus on camera and off.
It would be bigger.
We've got her back.
Bigger than Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce if Sarah Jessica Parker and Kim Cattrall like went to dinner at the Odeon. And like, you know, like the paparazzi found out about it. Like they, if they ever did like a real healing moment in New York City, it would be the news. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar brand of show. So it would just be the biggest thing in the world if they actually did do that.
Do you know if Kim has relationship with the other girls?
I believe she's Kim claims that she was iced out by them during the show. And then they blamed her for not getting Sex and the City 3 greenlit. And one of my friends worked in development at Warner Brothers, and she read the Sex and the City 3 script. And she was like, oh, this sucks. And Big was supposed to die in the third movie. And just like that, season one was sort of a version of new characters and like more plot lines to draw it out. But yeah.
Wow.
Let's take a quick break. We will be right back with Felicia. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I'm a big therapy person. I would say, for me, the greatest benefit of therapy, if I can look back at all of the years that I have spent in therapy, has been changing the way that I speak to myself internally. You know, everybody always says, like, you have to treat yourself the way that you would treat a friend. That's much easier said than done. So many of us are our own worst critics, and it takes some help to untangle that. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try because it's entirely online. So it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So take a moment, visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likematt. You know, this show is all about honest conversations where we really face our fears. And for some of us, it's a fear of aging. For some of us, it's a fear of carbs. And hey, I get it. The fear is real. But that is why I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Hero Bread. Hero Bread has remade many of your favorite foods, but in these fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Two of my favorite things. I've always said if I ever have twin children, their names are going to be protein and fiber. What did I have for lunch today? a tuna sandwich on their seeded bread. It was the perfect texture. It toasts up just like a dream. My God, was it good. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you will get 10% off your first order. So don't give up on being a breadhead, because Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. Chris. And we are back. Now that we have solved all things Samantha and Kim Cattrall,
Where are we?
Aiden's stripping the floors.
Charlotte proposes to herself. Charlotte proposes to herself because she just wants it so bad. And she says in the first episode of season three, I'm going to get married. And she meets this guy. And they feel like their timing is right. And she just forces it along, which I have respect for. But yeah, when Carrie opens the door and Charlotte's like, I'm engaged. It's like her faces were always so iconic. Just how the way her brows move and everything. Charlotte is, you know, so watchable. She's the best.
And it coined the alrighty. I mean, like alrighty.
And Bunny. This is her first episode.
That's right.
This is Bunny McDougal's first episode.
One of the great TV demons of all time.
Frances Sternhagen, God bless her.
Love her.
Yeah, so good.
In heaven.
I just wrote down in the good quotes, easy, they don't call it a job for nothing. I mean, that just takes us back to the blowjob scene once again. So can either of you defend what Carrie does here? Which, I mean, listeners know, but she has checked. She's, you know, gone to a hotel to work because Aiden is stripping her floors and it's making too much noise. Already a little bit like, okay, I don't know how much you can complain when he's doing this like very extensive job for you for free.
But I blame him. I totally blame him. Who you tells a man on the phone that your girlfriend's at a hotel?
I don't know that. Do you think it was clear? This is a good question. Do you think it was clear that when Big called and Aiden picked up, that Aiden knew who it was, or did Aiden not know? And the guy was just looking for Carrie, and he might have thought it was a business thing. Could have thought it was her editor, and just told her that she was.
I think you're right, Chris.
Stanhope Hotel, because like you're like, oh, I'm the guy.
They were not clear about any of it. So she's like, you called my house. I automatically thought he showed up again. So that's why I was like, he went there and told her where she was.
Yeah.
But then, you know, she says, you called my house again. And I don't know, like.
Seven playbacks later, he got in a little. Yeah.
He got in a little.
That phone call was horrible.
Yeah.
When he's in his town car and he tells her that like what he said to her at the show wasn't real. And it's going to cost him too much.
Yeah.
That it was a money thing. That he's like, that was terrible. I will say, though, I obviously defend what she did in the end of the episode because they ended up getting married. So, you know, I think that sometimes I think the marriage to Natasha was the bad thing. If we're really on Carrie's side. You know, they engaged in immoral behavior in this episode, but it was a means to an end. She could have waited.
Yeah.
She could have waited, but.
It's not an attractive look for someone to be like, you know, drunk at a furniture expo being like, my wife sucks. She's beige. Yeah. You know, like, how do you later be like, you know what? I will marry him.
I think what's more defensible is probably what happened when Natasha falls down the stairs. I feel that Carrie not leaving immediately when Big leaves the apartment and she's eating the Chinese food and she's like going through her fridge and flowers like that. That is when things got really completely indefensible. But I think like this, because of their history, because of how torn she was for the, you know, few episodes preceding this, like When she was at the opera, she left because he was there. When she was on the boat and he was on the same boat, she tried to escape him. And then, like, she saw him and walked away. They really built it up so that they had to be in this enclosed, very confined space of the elevator at the Stanhope Hotel, mm-hmm. which I think is now, I forget what it was renamed, but it's the hotel I think is still there across from the Met. And it's the same hotel that she, in season one, when he's sitting outside with the divorced guy and she's corrects him on the crossword puzzle, I think, and she's walking away and he asks her out and she's walking away in the end of the episode and she turns around and looks at him and smiles. She turns back and the voiceover says, "Damn, would have been so cool if I just kept walking." That's the same hotel that they, I don't know if they knew that or maybe it was just the hotel that was available, but yeah, that was, so I that was sort of the beginning of their relationship when he asked her out officially for the first time. And now that's where their relationship rekindles in this episode.
True historian, Christopher.
I'm just blown away.
The amount of brain space that could have been devoted to, oh gosh, you know, clean energy. But
there's still time.
I gotta burn some of these Sex and the City brain cells and fill it with far more useful information.
That would be very useful today. You know, it's nice to have someone here who knows the show well, because frankly, I don't, even though I position myself as an expert. What else? I mean, yeah, they have sex, the affair starts. There are just so many sliding doors moments in this episode. Like, even for Charlotte, the red flag that Trey said all righty and that she had to kind of manipulate him into getting the proposal she wanted. It's like,
in the same way that his mother manipulates him, which is
right.
You know, a little edible for my taste for a 40-something doctor. You know, he should.
Right.
Charlotte is a great study. She is a great study, though. Let me tell you, she picks very quickly and applies them much better than most people I know.
It's true. It's really true. She was smart enough to know to get what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, I mean, she knew what she wanted and she got it. But now that she got it, she doesn't know how she feels. So,
well, it's kind of like when she's trying to get Harry to marry her. And when he's like about to come and she says, asks him if the Jewish thing doesn't matter. And then he says, "I don't care." And then, you know,
and she scares him off. And she's like, set a date. Like, and she chases him away. Like her, she's a quick study, but when she has those blinders on, I mean,
oh yeah, there's no taking them off.
You know, what is the saying? Like, my mother in Christ, like she, or my mother in, you know, Moses, or, you know, in this, because she converted. But yeah, it's just, she, when it comes to this stuff, she is so set in her ways. And
he says, I'm a rules girl. That's it. I'm a rules girl, you know?
Yeah.
And as much as I'm like, run, Trey sucks, clearly sucks. You know, the truth is, she never would have been drawn to Harry if she hadn't gone through what she's about to go through with Trey. And same thing with Carrie, as much as I'm like, take all of the red flags that Big has waved in your face in this episode.
Yeah.
And hold on to your perfect boyfriend. She does have to go. And we talk about this a lot on the show too, that like, as much as I hate Big, every time he hurts her, it does make her a better character. Everything that happens to her when she's recovering from a breakup is some of the best stuff in the show.
Yeah, yeah. I love single Carrie, but I love her with Big too. I really and with Aiden.
Do you think when she was married to Big, it was actually all that great?
I do.
You do?
Personally. I think they mellowed out. I think they both mellowed out, and I think obviously I don't know. I remember my parents. Like, they always had a, you know, pretty stable marriage, and they were married until my father passed. But I feel like they both mellowed out just like as people as they got older into their 60s, and my sister and I left home and stuff. And I feel like that they never had kids too. So they didn't have those extra stressors. They had all the money in the world, and I think maybe the time that we didn't see them married, that they chilled out. You know, maybe it wasn't all smooth sailing, but like, you know, I think I would like to see that. Felicia, have you ever had a big of your own? You
I've
have.
absolutely had a big of my own. Yes, I have. And I mean, I survived it and I did not marry him. And I think
Is
that
he still with us? Did he have an unfortunate Peloton that day?
no, he's still here. But I just think that's the whole idea of the big is you should never be without that. You know, I don't think that that is the healthy person at all for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I never really liked big also. I never really,
Yeah.
I understood the chase and the excitement of it all, but I never felt like she was ever gonna, he was never gonna make her happy. And that
Yeah.
was what was important to me as the viewer, so invested in her life. But I felt like she really played a big part of that herself and not
Yeah.
wanting to be happy, which is why she chose big, which is,
And
you know,
she
a
got
lot of
messy.
women do that. Yeah,
Yeah.
messy.
I think also I can see how Chris Noth, as just like a man, is he's very attractive and very handsome and tall, and his and big as like character is very wealthy and well dressed and stuff. So I can understand her adoration for him, but I don't think Carrie and I have the same type. Like I wasn't into Aiden, I wasn't attracted to Berger or Petrovsky. So I don't know. I always felt like whoever she was with, I was like, oh, like not for me, but like, you know, happy for
Yeah, good
her,
for
you
her.
know.
Same.
Who would have been for you? Anybody out of any of the other girls besides Bobby Cannavale, which I
No,
think we all
Samantha.
been into.
Samantha's
We all
got
have
it.
been.
Yes.
Yeah, Bobby
Bobby
Cannavale.
kind of, yeah.
Oh no, John Slattery.
John Slattery, yes. Yeah, so but yeah, I don't would you have peed on John Slattery?
Well,
Or would you have peed
absolutely.
on Roger Sterling? Would you have peed on Roger Sterling but not John Slattery or either one?
All of them.
Okay.
All of them together. I love him. I was actually once met his wife, and she was reading for me for something. I was like, "Oh my God, I had a sex dream about your husband," and she thought
Oh
I
my
meant her
God.
first husband. That's George Clooney. She was married to George Clooney first, Talia Balsam.
Now
She was
she and
married to
I
John,
have the same taste. Yeah,
and
she has
I was
very,
like,
very good.
"No, John," and she's like, "He's not going to believe that. This is many years." She's like, "He's never going to believe that." I was like, "No," and she's like, "Everyone always says about my first husband." Yeah,
I love
Oh
that.
my
That's
God.
sexy.
Anything else we haven't covered? Oh yeah, go ahead.
No, I think the lunch scenes between the girls in this episode are really, really strong. Just
Oh yeah.
the classic lunch scene, rat-a-tat dialogue, incredibly funny. You know, well, let's face it, honey, you won. Oh, I would have punched him. You know, like that's a, and then also we get what is always makes the show great. We get a great Carrie and Miranda scene when they're
Yep.
listening,
Yeah.
like she's like, well, what do you think it means? And they like, and Miranda says, I mean, we could study this for years and not know. They still don't know who killed Kennedy. Like, you know, just great, great,
So
you know, chef's
good.
kiss dialogue. And I mean, we always love a Carrie and Miranda scene. I think people
Oh yeah.
now like it when they fight, but you got to earn those fights with also these great scenes where they just know each other so, so, so well.
And I like when it's not
Agreed.
like walking, having, you know, something, a tasty delight or whatever. I like when they're like in the room together and moving around. Like you just see them comfortable in each other's space more. You get a lot of them walking and talking. So it is nice when you see them in that home
They
environment.
walk and talked in this episode too, in front of and on Fifth Avenue, right by the plaza in the Sherry Netherland Hotel, 59th and Fifth, and the, and Miranda's is talking about the corner of Heartbreak and West Shit Street. You know, that's another great Miranda Carey scene.
And Miranda, by the way, I mean, I know we had our notes on her hair, but I the like burgundy suit and the red shirt underneath. I'm not mad at that
Iconic.
look.
Gorgeous,
Pretty
gorgeous.
great. And
Iconic.
Carrie's wearing the DVF wrap dress. I mean, we had
Oh, yeah.
some really, really powerful images in this episode.
And I don't think green juice was a thing before this episode.
Right.
Yeah, I think it
Trying
was
to
just
clean
kind
out
of
the comp. Yeah.
starting to get there, you know. And I was in LA at that point, so we were already doing it there. But yeah, the shot
in New York. It had come. It had just arrived in New York.
Avocados hadn't gotten there yet.
Oh, and by the way, we didn't mention the best moment, the transition from after, you know, Samantha is with Bobby Cannavale and she swallows and she has done the taste test and it didn't work. And she's making that face Chris is making right now beautifully. She clearly wants to spit it out. And we cut right to Trey shoving like a real juicy bite of Caesar salad with creamy dressing into his mouth.
And he doesn't like the dressing. Best writing ever. Wait, he doesn't like the dressing. It's the same thing.
Samantha said in another episode she never swallows.
Yes. No, in this episode, she said she doesn't swallow. She said, and I don't swallow. That's in this episode.
What she never explores as an option, you know, they make the joke where she's like, what about no blowjobs? That didn't even occur to me. Hilarious. They never... I get that it's too much of a hole, but they never occurred to her to just not let him come in her mouth.
Yeah.
You know, that's another option. But then we wouldn't have this beautiful episode. So
funky spunk.
No complaints here.
Funky spunk. Another lexicon entering that was, you know, funk. It sends a chill down my spine that I was like 12. Hearing this dialogue, and I turned out not like a complete prostitute from this being my sort of education on what adults were like. That, I mean, it's a true miracle that I was able to absorb all of this incredible raunch and get out unscathed. Yeah,
good job.
This was an important summit. I learned a lot. I felt a lot, and so grateful to both of you, Felicia Fasano, Chris Baker. Thank you so very much for doing the show.
Professor Baker.
Baker, that's right.
Dr. Professor
Doctor.
Baker.
Wow. What a dissertation.
Yes. Again, clean energy is where I should divert, you know, my attention next with Sex and the City lobotomy.
I need you to keep your eyes on this project. This to me is our clean energy.
Love that. We need it. We need it. Yes, absolutely.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.